Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The death of conservative activist author Phyllis Schlafly at age 92 earlier this week brought back a lot of memories of her anti-feminist activism, her conservative politics, and her political influence. Joining me in studio to talk about Phyllis Schlafly is political reporter Joe Manis. She covered Mrs. Schlafly for many, many years, most recently at the Republican Convention. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for asking me.
You know, most of us have a perception of Phyllis Schlafly, the public perception. She was on the air a lot, and it got a lot of publicity. You saw her from a somewhat different perspective, kind of behind the scenes. What did you make of her?
Well, I think as a reporter, different reporters had different views of her. I respected her a lot, forgetting whatever one's positions are on the issues. The thing about her, and again, she was somewhat of a paradox because she said one thing and did another as far as her own life, but she... A, said what she believed, and she believed what she said. And I always admire that in a politician, regardless of party, because it just infuses something in them. There's just an energy in them. B, I don't know, I can't talk to her relationship with other reporters, but she was always very accessible to me. I was in the Washington Bureau for the Post-Dispatch in the early 80s, during the time when the Schlafly's effort to make abortion opposition a key part of the platform, when that really began to get fruition. The 4 years I was there, I covered the anti-abortion march every January. Mm-hmm. And it was Ronald Reagan who was the first president who would speak to them like over the loudspeaker. Before that, presidents didn't do that. And she has said that it was the Reagan years in 80 that really shifted the party from, because she has said that, and she's right, under the Nixon years, it was the GOP, abortion was pretty much, they weren't getting into it. It was generally considered they were pro-choice.
Well, I think it indicates clearly her political influence, because we have a clip here of her talking about that and about her role in pushing the abortion issue.
Under Nixon, the Republican Party was pro-abortion. And by working with a platform, I changed what the Republican Party was all about. And it's a good story. I urge you to recommend it.
I had talked. That's where she and I are talking at the Cleveland convention about 6 weeks ago, and it was the last major public appearance she had. And I was able to sit and talk to her for about half an hour on different issues, and this was one of the ones she talked about. And she was extremely, extremely powerful in the 80s and early 90s. And as I said, I saw it firsthand in the early 80s. She had a lot of influence with the Reagan White House, and her behind the scenes. Eagle Forum was just beginning to get some muscle.
Her organization.
Yes, that she founded in the midst of the fight against the ERA in the late 70s. It initially had a different name, but then it became the Eagle Forum. And initially it was based out of Alton, because she lived in Alton, because that's where she and her husband lived. After he died, she moved in the early 90s back to the Missouri side, where she'd grown up.
Yeah.
She had been a WashU grad and had tested firearms during World War II. I still can't get over that. And she ended up with 3 degrees, including a law degree that she got later in life. She set up this education center, which still stands in Clayton. She lived in Ladue. And as a reporter, I found her very accessible. I really started dealing with her fairly regularly in the early 90s when I was back here covering politics. And I could get her on the phone. You could get her on stuff. She was extremely open. As again, she's got her point of view, but she wants to get it out there, and she didn't consider the press the enemy. And some politicians in both parties tend to treat you differently.
Why do you think she was so successful as the face of the anti-ERA movement?
Well, I think a couple things. I don't want to offend anybody, but I think one of the reasons is because she was a woman. So for the Republicans, it helps if they have somebody, I mean, a woman who's out there talking about these issues. Whether one agrees or disagrees with her, it's better to, you know, from a tactical standpoint to have, because see, originally she became famous in the 60s for her support of Goldwater, one of her first books, Choice Not an Echo, and she was also really big in anti-communism. But she really didn't become this icon until she shifted to the social issues.
Yeah, but you know, here's, I think this is what you meant before when you were talking about she said one thing and did another. Here she was during the ERA fight telling women to stay in the kitchen and have dinner ready for their husband. When she was anything but that, she was out working very, very hard as kind of a professional in this area.
Yeah, and she had six children. Now, she had told me several times that, A, she said she didn't do anything that her husband objected to, and that, B, she did try to, you know, cook and stuff when she was there at home. And her kids, I mean, they're grown-ups now, but her children have all, you know, she had good relations with all the children that I met, mm-hmm. and who I've dealt with over the years, and some of whom are involved in her, who are involved in helping her run Eagle Forum, or at the end, while she was less well the last year or two, several of her sons, you know, were helping get her around. And so there was, it's not like she was there alone. I mean, I think that she was very loyal to politicians who stuck to their guns. And I remember, especially in the, let's say 10 years ago, you had all these presidential candidates who would troop here where she'd have this big thing in September. Yeah. In fact, the Eagle Forum is still going to have this big thing about a week from now. And but it's telling there are not as many major names as what they had a year or two ago.
You say she liked people who would stick to their guns. She
yes.
also, her last endorsement was of Donald Trump. We have another clip that you got from her at the convention. Let's listen to that.
I believe in being active in politics. That's why I'm here. And I've been active in politics all my life. So I'm very happy with what's been taking place so far. You probably know that I was one of the first ones to endorse Donald Trump. And when people asked me why I endorsed him, I said, read A Choice, Not an Echo, and then you'll know the answer to that question.
She was pretty good at promoting her books, too.
Oh, yes.
In both of those clips, she mentions separate books.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. As I said, I got to be, as a reporter, I know she could be an intimidating figure, but I always respected her. And as a result, as I said, I never had a problem getting a hold of her or talking to her. And when she turned 80, I did a massive profile of her, and actually she let me sit in while she did her radio recordings and some other stuff. And I think that, again, whether one agreed or disagreed with her stance, I think she was a trailblazer in really a – Phyllis Schlafly is a major reason why there's a lot of these social conservative provisions in the platform – and also that the social conservative voting bloc has become so powerful within the Republican Party. I don't think that would have happened without her activity 35, 40 years ago.
You know, you used a word that I've used a lot with regard to Phyllis Schlafly, and that is intimidating. I spoke to her many times during the 70s and 80s, and not nearly as extensively as you did, but I always found her very intimidating to talk to, because if you weren't prepared, if you didn't know your stuff and asking your questions, she'd have you for lunch. You find that?
Well, as I said, maybe it's because as a reporter, I tend to show up at a lot of stuff. And, I mean, for both parties, and I've always done that because I think you don't get stories if you're not hanging around once in a while. And so she got used to, I mean, she would have things out in West County, and if I wasn't doing something, I'd go out there that evening just to listen to kind of what was being said. So the helpful thing was, I said, I had her cell phone the last 15 years, so I could usually get her if I really needed to get her on something. A couple times she'd call me with tips on things, you know, on conservative things. Now, granted, she had her angle. Every politician does. But as a reporter, you respect that, you know, because they understand your job. And she felt, at for whatever reason, that I fairly, or, you know, was at least fairly presenting her point of view, you know, because it's not my job, I really believe this, to put my own opinion in, other than to make sure I lay out the person I cover what their sure. opinions are. And so the first couple times I remember meeting her, and I was a little nervous. This is like 25, 26 years ago, where I really had a big interview with her, like 91. But after that, I didn't really, as I said, I found her, as I said, compared to many politicians who I covered, she was much more accessible. And there was an incident, the 2008 presidential convention in St. Paul. This is the Republican one, where some left group, it's Code Pink, where Phyllis had a big event. And I was going, and a couple other reporters. Well, she had made me a credential ahead of time because she thought, you know, I'd come by. Well, somebody stole it, and they got in, one of these protesters. Okay, well, I didn't get in until, like, later, and I was totally oblivious to all this. Well, then the next day or two, I get a call from some big TV station in Minneapolis, and they're going to make a big deal about it. I mean, you can go on the internet. You can still see it. And they were going to make a big deal about it. They thought that I had done something or this and that. And to her credit, one of them had called her, and she's like, well, no, Joe didn't have anything to do with that. Somebody just – and, it just goes to show she could be fairly straight with people. And I appreciated that she was always straight with me. And that's true of any politician in any in any party.
Sure. It sounds like she demanded loyalty from to the party of the politician she supported, but she was fairly loyal herself to people she trafficked with.
Oh, yeah. In fact, when I talked to her in this last interview, I mean, one of her lament, you know, she was concerned that the Cruz people weren't going to come on board. Here she is not feeling well. She's in Cleveland. She's in a wheelchair. And she's really concerned that the Cruz people are going to deep six things for Trump. And the Cruz Trump thing split her own family. I mean, because some of her relatives are big in the Ted Cruz effort. So it was fascinating to me that she's like, well, I don't want things messed up for Trump, because now that we're with Trump, we've got to be with him. You know, I mean, tactically, she was extremely sharp.
Talking about family splits, there have been a couple. Well publicized since. One's going on right now with the future of Eagle Forum, in which her daughter is involved with with Ed Martin, who is the head of the operation. And then, of course, there was a lawsuit involving Tom Schlafly, her nephew, over the use of the name Schlafly for marketing beer. She thought it was too important to be associated with beer, particularly for conservatives and Christians.
Right, right. And I mean, she's a devout Catholic. Yeah. I had talked to her daughter, Ann Corey, the day she died. And Ann Corey, who is, again, one of Phyllis's daughters, who was vice chair of the Eagle Forum. And Ann A. had been with the Ted Cruz faction, and opposed the fact that her mother and Martin had gone with Trump. And Ann led the fight to get Ed Martin ousted as president. He has resisted. I mean, there's this whole fight over who's going to – and that's the one sad thing, I mean, from Schlafly's perspective – is that, and this happens sometimes in groups and organizations that are their main focus is this person at the top. You know, it's the whole, when that person's gone, you see these power shifts. And confrontation. And I'm wondering what the Eagle Forum's going to be like, or if even it'll be around in 5 years.
That is obviously still playing out. I should point out, by the way, that she lost the suit against Tom Schlafly with regard to the use of the name. What kind of a vacuum does she leave, Joe, or does she leave one? I mean, she was active, but was she active enough to leave a vacuum?
Well, I think she had been, you know, curtailing some of her, because she'd been ill. I mean, hey, she's 92. The last few years, so while she'd been active, I mean, she still hosted events and things. She wasn't the force that she had been even 10, 8 years ago. But still, I think it does leave a vacuum for the social conservative movement. The social conservative movement has several groups, But they're also countering with, like, the Tea Party movement, which is conservative, but it's not so much centered on social conservative stuff. And I think you're going to see some of this turmoil, which you've seen on a smaller scale. But I think now with Phyllis Schlafly's death, I predict you're going to see more of that, because there's going to be jockeying for, it may not be Eagle Farm, it may be something else, but I think within the social conservative movement, there is going to be increasing unrest as they try to, you know, organize, make sure they have the people that they can trust at the top. You see this occasionally, but I think you're going to see a lot of turmoil within the Republican Party, forgetting the Trump factor. I think he may be exacerbating it a little bit, only because many of the activists aren't sure where he is. I mean, you've got some social conservatives who don't back him because they don't trust his views on certain social issues. Now, Schlafly, in that interview, told me that he had promised her when he was here in March for the primary, he had talked to her, and she was actually there on the stage with him briefly, that he promised her that he would follow the platform and that he would embrace the pro-life principles. Now, whether or not he would follow through with his president, I don't know. But this is the kind of thing where some social conservatives are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And you've got others who are like, well, we'd rather have Ted Cruz or somebody like that who we know is with us. So you're going to see this for the next few years.
Who is the Phyllis Schlafly in the party now, do you think? Or is there such a person?
See, that's the thing. I'm not sure there is now. Now, part of it, frankly, is because of the rise of social media, where you have communication is so diverse. People can just put things out there for discussion. So there's a lot of players. I mean, it's not the same as one person, one or two people. And I think I think the fight over the Supreme Court, which was big on her mind. I mean, she had written a book, one of her books about 5 or 6 years ago, had been blasting the Supreme Court, but emphasizing the importance of having, in her view, the right people on the court. And Democrats would agree with it, too. It's just they want different people. But she was the one who was really driving the importance of the Supreme Court. And frankly, when Pence was here on Tuesday and I covered him, what was one of his big things? The Supreme Court. He's telling all these Republicans in the room that you got to get out there, you've got to vote for us, and you've got to do this and that because the Supreme Court is at stake. And I think that's one of her legacies, in that she zeroed in on certain key issues, whether one agrees with those issues or not. But she drove those to be major planks, not only in the GOP platform, but frankly, any major Republican has to adhere to those, or they can't get anywhere.
We have to wrap this up, but if you were writing her obit, and that has long since been written, what do you think your first line or two about Phyllis Schlafly would have been?
Sometimes I think of that first title, Choice, Not an Echo, because she made sure, I mean, she made a choice. And as I said, she believed what she stood for. I mean, and maybe that's it. I mean, she stood for something and she stuck with it, and she made no apologies.
She's certainly one of the important figures of the last half of the last century.
Yes, and I think it is interesting that the St. Louis, she's from St. Louis, and she was always loyal to St. Louis.
Right. Joe, thank you so much. I appreciate your talking about this. Wish we had more time, but that's always the case when I have a chance to talk to you. Thank you for taking us behind the headlines, Joe Manis.
Okay, thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.